The film actor Crispin Glover became known in the 1980s for such unconventional characters as the morally ambiguous teenage ringleader in River's Edge and the weak-willed dad in Back to the Future. In recent years, moviegoers have been treated to similarly outlandish performances by Glover in such mainstream materials as Charlie's Angels and Alice in Wonderland, and the smaller films, Willard and Reuben and Ed. At the same time, Glover has been making his own extremely unusual films, which he presents at select cinemas around the country, along with a narrated slideshow of his visual art. WFIU's Yael Cassander called Glover in anticipation of his two-night stand at the IU Cinema this weekend.
Hi there, this is Yael from WFIU.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Let me tell you, this is a super great honor. You're just iconic. I think anyone who's seen River's Edge or even Back to the Future would not be able to forget you. You're notorious for having stolen the show, in fact, even when you have small parts. On that note, you could have easily taken leading man roles from the get-go, and you started in your career so early. So I'm curious about how, you know, a handsome guy like you ever started playing freaks.
I mean, the word freak is a slang, so it means different things to different people. Technically, you know, that word came from something quite different, meaning people that were performing in sideshows, which is very different than what I play, I think. So I just wouldn't use that term.
So what term do you favor? Eccentric is a term that's been bandied about quite a bit.
Well, I don't mind that term. I think there's something interesting about the word eccentric in that it's a mathematical term, which means to veer off from that line. So I find there's something poetically interesting about that term, and maybe there's something applicable about that. I do tend toward, particularly with my own filmmaking, I like to make films that will let people question things.
So how would you prepare those who are interested in seeing what you've been doing lately because they've followed your career? How would you prepare them for what they're considering seeing?
Well, on two subsequent nights, I present two different feature films, and then I perform two different what I call slideshows. The slideshows are one-hour dramatic narrations of eight different books that are profusely illustrated. The images from the books are projected behind me. The books are mostly from the 1800s that I'd taken and reworked them and turned them into different books from what they originally were. So there's a one-hour dramatic narration of the books, which are, again, visually supported. And then there's a feature film, and these are parts one and two of what will eventually be a trilogy of films. People don't have to see these films in order. It's okay. The first film is called What Is It? Most of the actors in that film have Down syndrome, but it's not about Down syndrome at all. What it really is my psychological reaction to the corporate constraints that have happened in the last 30 years or more of filmmaking, wherein anything that can possibly make an audience member uncomfortable is necessarily excised, or that film will not be corporately funded or distributed. And I think that's a very damaging thing, because it's that moment when an audience member sits back in their chair, looks up at the screen, and thinks to themselves, is this right what I'm watching? Is this wrong what I'm watching? Should I be here? Should the filmmaker have done this? What is it? And that's the title of the film. What is it that's taboo in the culture? What does it mean when the taboo has been ubiquitously excised? And again, I think this is very damaging, because it's those moments when audiences are asking questions that there's real education. And that isn't happening in this media culture right now. And what is the opposite of education, really? Well, it's propaganda. And I do think that's what's happening in our culture's media.
And so what's the experience you've had over the last 7 years, as you've shown the film, with people who are advocates for the disabled? Do you get some pushback from that community?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by pushback, but basically I've found that community is very supportive. You know, whether I'm working with people with developmental disabilities or physical disabilities, I've had a great deal of very positive reaction from it. The second film is called It Is Fine, Everything Is Fine. And it was written by one of the actors that is in What Is It? He's a man named Stephen C. Stewart, who'd been born with a severe case of cerebral palsy. And when his mother died when he was in his early 20s, he was put into a nursing home. And the people that were taking care of him there would derisively call him an MR, a mental retard, which isn't a very nice thing to say to anybody. But Steve was of normal intelligence, and the emotional turmoil that he must have gone through for the decade that he was locked into that nursing home, I can't even begin to imagine. Mm. But he wrote this screenplay when he got out of the nursing home. It's a fantastical retelling of his point of view of life. It's a little bit hard to describe, but when the whole trilogy is done, this film will be the best film of the trilogy. But not only that, I feel like it'll be the best film I'll have anything to do with in my whole career. There's something that comes forth in the film that is quite unique.
We'll hear more of Yael Cassander's conversation with filmmaker Crispin Glover, who will be hosting two evenings at the IU Cinema this weekend, later on in the program. And we'll close this week's program with the conclusion of Yael Cassander's conversation with filmmaker Crispin Glover, which we heard earlier in this program. Glover will be hosting two evenings at the IU Cinema this weekend. While discussing the preparations Glover is making for his next film, Yael discovered the unexpectedly practical spirit that lurks beneath Glover's offbeat persona.
So you said you're building the sets at your home, this 17th or 16th century mansion in the Czech Republic. What led you there? That seems like the most unusual choice for real estate.
Well, I do have some Czech heritage, but that wasn't the reason. I'm pretty pragmatic, actually, and I like to shoot on sets. Everything Is Fine is everything was shot on sets in that film, and most of What Is It? It was shot on sets. I prefer working that way. People sometimes think it's less expensive to shoot on sets, but it's actually more expensive. And that can be adjusted if you make multiple productions on similar sets, which was in the back of my mind when I made Everything Is Fine, but I didn't own the property when we made that. The person that I was working with when we built the sets lost their lease during the end of the production. Mm. And the sets that I put a lot of money into, I funded the film with the money that I made from the first Charlie's Angels film. Essentially, that went into the sets for the film. And they had to be torn down the day after we finished the last day of shooting. And I realized I would be able to continue to shoot over multiple productions reutilizing sets. I'd have to own the property. This is the only way to make it so that it's viable economically to shoot on sets at the budget level that I have for my own films. But what this meant is that I had to buy property somewhere that I like, and that would be economically feasible. I was working on a screenplay with a producer in Prague right around the time that I was looking to buy property specifically to have sets. I own a house in Los Angeles, and I'd always planned to own property here first, somewhere in New York second. I was born in New York, and somewhere in Europe much later in my life. I didn't know when, why, or where exactly. I was kind of thinking, okay, what I'll do is I'll buy something in upstate New York, a farm or something like that. And I was talking to this producer about it, and he said he'd read an article about a realtor that specialized in Czech chateaus and that they were going for a very good price. And as soon as he said it, I knew it was the right thing to do. The dollar was high at the time. This was 2003, I think. I know that I changed my dollar over to Czech crowns to buy the property on the day that the U.S. invaded Baghdad, because I knew that there would be a slight lift in the dollar on that day, and I knew that the dollar was going to continue to plunge after that, which it has. The dollar was quite high at that time. It had already started falling a little bit once the war started in in the Middle East there.
Can I interject just for a moment on behalf of my listeners, who will probably be pretty flabbergasted that this character that they know from so many films, and who I'm sure in many people's minds represents someone who is so far out, both as the characters you've played and just as a persona, is someone who's financially so savvy and so obviously practical that you're following the rise and fall of the dollar vis-a-vis foreign currencies. I mean, you realize that, right? This is going to come as a major surprise to a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's funny to me because I understand, you know, like when we started the conversation, you were talking about the kind of characters I played, what have you. And I understand, you know, there's a persona that is... I don't even think about it, really. It is so separated from my day-to-day existence. I've always artistically had a strong interest in unusual characters or unusual subject matter. I see people posting things about the persona of Crispin Glover as being this crazy entity, and I understand I've played characters and done things in media that make people think that, and I've never really fought it or anything, but I also don't try to encourage it either. I'm living my life, and I'm not saying I'm putting a persona on. I've certainly been a part of what people perceive about me, but it's so removed from my day-to-day existence.
As if on cue, day-to-day existence managed to insinuate itself at that very moment.
Oh, somebody's up as well. Excuse me.
Morning. Oh, hi, how are you doing?
I need a check for these, because whoever's sending it to you is charging a brokerage fee.
Hold on a second. I have a cat coming to my door right now.
If you need to go, that's
okay.
Fine.
And this is a great interview. I really appreciate it. I do have a UPS person,
okay.
And I got to deal with something I'm a little confused about. So
thank you so much for your time and your very thoughtful responses.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Yeah. Hey, you too.
Crispin Glover presents his films It Is Fine, Everything Is Fine, and What Is It? At the IU Cinema this Friday and Saturday night. Before each film, Glover presents his big slideshow, a one-hour dramatic narration of 8 different illustrated books he has made over the years. Find out more on our website, wfiu.org/arts.